Today is the 10th of December 2020, and it's a test day. So we'll be continuing from this book, The Essence of Sutra of Infinite Meanings. This is based on the teaching on the adapted verses of the Sutra of Infinite Meaning or Innumerable Meaning. We are at page 62. Or 63, yeah? So we will continue from there till we have finished the chanting and the meditation. This is on chapter 1, Virtue. And for the benefit of one or two who are new, I was told by Joyce, she got two friends who may be locking in. I think I saw one of them, Susan. The other one, Anna, hasn't come in yet. So Susan, Susie, you're most welcome to join us. We really rejoice with your wholesomeness. And what we will do is, the chanting will be based on Mahayana combining with Theravada tradition. So you may find it a little bit slightly different. But it is just to tie up the two teachings. Actually, both the Theravada and Mahayana teaching are the same teaching. They are taught by Sakyamuni Buddha. So it is good that we can understand the similarity so that we can link them together. So I will start off with Mahayana salutation, followed by Theravada. Then after that, the Theravada chanting. If you are new for the first time, you hear it. Hope you can understand the reason behind all this. Because I am English educated. When I started all this sharing, most of them were from Theravada traditions. But as the years go by, Mahayana teaching somehow came about. And many people who are very new to Mahayana teaching or alien to Mahayana teaching, they were quite skeptical about the teaching until the last 10 or more years when I started sharing them. Then they realized it's the same. You can understand Theravada, you can also understand Mahayana. So nothing esoteric or extraordinary. So because of that, now their faith are different. So our sharing has become a lot easier. So hopefully with this, people who are new, who are logging in to our Zoom session for the first time, they can have the understanding. So today, maybe for a change, I have to do some introduction where there are one or two new people around. Normally, after the puja chanting, I will start off with the half an hour of awareness-based meditation. So awareness-based meditation is different from thought-based meditation. So the purpose of awareness-based meditation is to develop the inner awareness or mindfulness within, so that we can realize our true mind. And from there, we can meditate. Yes, that is our silent mind, meditative mind, the true mind. And before that, the reason why we do the puja is because it is a tradition recommended by Sakyamuni Buddha. Before we start any Buddhist ceremony or session, the Buddha advises us to do certain important salutation or chanting so that we can get to cultivate all the important essential Dhamma and teaching that the Buddha has given us is for our preparation to walk this path. Because to walk this path, you need to have merits, you need to have parami, you need to have spiritual faculties and understanding. So the puja chanting is a type of devotional practice that the Buddha has introduced. So we start off by reciting the salutation to the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, to all the great beings of the Mahayana tradition. So through this salutation, we pay our respect, we rejoice. So these are all meritorious actions, and we cultivate great affinity with the Triple Gem. Then after that, we recite the salutation. Oh, sorry, before the salutation, we take refuge with the Triple Gem. Refuge in the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha, three times. Establishing refuge is very important so that you will have strong affinity with the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. So whenever you arise, if there is a Sammasambuddha, you will have the affinity to connect. Similarly, wherever there is the Dhamma, you can connect. And wherever there is a Aryan disciples of the Buddha or enlightened disciple of the Buddha, you can also connect. So these triple gems are the gems of all the teaching, where this is where the real teachings of the Buddha can be found. And after taking refuge, we renew our five precepts. And precept is a meritorious action, and precept is very important. It is the basis for following the advice of the Buddha, the first advice, avoid all evil. Breaking the precept constitutes breaking major evils, because all these five precepts, they are very, very important, very comprehensive. Any of these five precepts you break, it constitutes major evil. That's why to avoid evil, you need to keep this minimum five precepts. Then after that, we also develop the spiritual faculties. We compose our mind to develop the faith. Then through understanding who the Buddha is, he is not only enlightened, but he is fully enlightened, perfect in wisdom and virtue. And his teaching is so wonderful that he can bring about enlightenment in the here and the now. It can free and liberate the living being's mind from all suffering. So because of that, we will have great gratitude and respect towards the Buddha. That's how our faith develops. Then when the faith develops, he will drive us to cultivate. Where we see the importance of this teaching, we have great respect and gratitude towards the Buddha. We are to have him, such a great being. You can say when the time he arrives, he is the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born. To have him as our guide, our teacher, is indeed a great blessing. So that gratitude, that faith become very strong, unshakable. Then after that, we develop the meditation to train our mind to develop sati, mindfulness, awareness, leading to a stable mind that is in the state of samadhi, collected and unwavering. Then with sati and samadhi, we can see things as they are, and we can realize the truth and awaken. So that is where the wisdom come in. So these five spiritual faculties are very important. Saddha, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya. They are the basis of living beings' mind state to receive Dhamma. That's why they are called spiritual faculties. When you have them, you can understand spiritual teaching, you can receive spiritual teaching, as opposed to the five mental hindrance, which hinders your mind from entering the meditative state. That's why living being has a lot of heedless thinking, deluded thinking. They think a lot is because of this mental hindrance. And the reason why the mental hindrance are there is because they lack the spiritual faculty, the opposite five. So understanding this is very important. And as we do the puja, this is just the opening puja, you will get to perform most of the 10 meritorious actions that you get to perform. So the 10 meritorious actions are dana, sila, and bhavana. Dana means generosity. We get to perform wholesomeness, generosity in many ways. We can radiate loving kindness. We can radiate kind thought, beautiful thoughts. And we can radiate whatever wholesomeness that we have. Then there is also this puja offering, which is a type of dana. We make offering to Triple Gem, offering of fruits, incense, clear water. All this has its great significance and symbols. So we reflect on them, especially flowers. You see the ephemeral or impermanent nature of the flower. Then fruit represent the law of karma. You reap what you sow. Then also it represents enlightenment, the friction, the path and friction. When you realize you can go through the enlightenment phase of path and friction. Then we have also the candle that symbolizes light, wisdom light, to overcome darkness, which is ignorance. Then light also symbolizes wisdom and clarity. Then we have clear water. So our mind must be like this clear water with clarity, tranquility, stillness. Then you can see clearly. Otherwise, when it's clouded by thought process, emotion, thinking, all the negative mind state like fear, worry, anxiety, self-lamentation, then you become miserable, you are afflicted. You cannot meditate with that type of mind. You cannot have the good life, the happy moment in life. So you cannot really develop the understanding of the teaching leading to the tranquil, still, and beautiful, heedful mind. So all these are part and parcel of the teaching. That's why we started off with the puja. Then later on, we get to meditate. So dana, sila is precept, we keep our precept, renewal precept we done. Then bhavana is meditation, which you will do after this, immediately. Then we pay respect, Triple Gem, also a type of meritorious action. Then we listen to the Dhamma. After this, we do the sharing. We listen to the Dhamma. Then we rejoice. Then we share merit. We transfer merit. All these are meritorious actions. Then those who help out in the service, in providing service for our Buddhist activity, that itself is a meritorious action. Service for others, service to the sasana, to the community. So service is a form of meritorious action. And after we listen to the Dhamma, the sharing, we straighten our views. Then later on, we create condition for Dhamma to be shared. So the gift of truth is also one of the meritorious action. That's why all the 10 meritorious actions will be there, and you get to do them. And this is very important, because when you cultivate all this, you are starting to follow the advice of the Buddha, which is keeping the precept to avoid all evil, then cultivating wholesomeness, merits, blessings, to develop the good karmic nature, so that you can transform your life, improve your life, and make your life better. Then after that, when you meditate, you develop wisdom. So the advice of the Buddha is very beautiful as spelled out in Dhammapada verse 183. The Buddha says, Sabba papasa akaranang kusalesa upasampadan sacitta pariyottapanang etang buddhanasasana. So the meaning is very beautiful. Sabbe is all, papasa is evil, akaranang. You have to avoid all evil. How do we do that? Keep the precepts, renew the precepts. Then kusalesa upasampadan. Kusala is wholesomeness. Wherever there is wholesomeness, do them, cultivate them. Then finally is sacitta. Citta is mind. Pariyodhapanam. Purify your mind means meditate to awaken, to straighten your view. Then the final one is, this is the advice of all Buddha. So sacitta pariyodhapanam. Followed by etang buddhana sasana. So this is the advice of all Buddhas. So this is the reason why we start with the opening puja, and towards the end we have the closing puja, and in between we have the meditation, then the sharing of the dhamma, then of course we have our meditation reporting, Q&A, then sharing of dhamma in daily life. So this will be a very comprehensive Dhamma session. So hopefully with this introduction, new people can understand better. Okay, so now I will give you some short instruction for awareness-based meditation. So as usual, we will have half an hour of awareness-based meditation. I will off the light now, then you can prepare yourself for the awareness-based meditation. For those who are new, I will give you some short instruction. You make sure you have a stable posture. So your posture need not be rigid. It can be any posture. Some who can sit cross-legged, you try to sit, relax, make sure your backbone is straight, and just breathe in, breathe out normally. Relax body and mind completely. Be at ease. Yeah. And after that, you can move on to meditate. As far as the posture is concerned, if you are elderly, you have trouble sitting in the cross-legged position, you don't have to cross your leg. You can just sit on a bench or sit on a couch or lean against the wall or relax. Make sure the posture is stable, relaxed, so that you can continue with the half an hour of awareness-based meditation. So because of the word awareness-based, you need to understand the four support that you need to develop awareness-based meditation. So the first support is to relax. Relax into every mind state that arises, body and mind, completely relax. Relax means at ease, no problem at all. So you're just silent, relax. Then the second support is maintain awareness. Awareness. Awareness means just be aware. It is a better definition than sati, because sati is actually awareness before the thinking mind arises, before the knowing, before the perception, before the sankhara activity. The mind is just quiet, aware, aware. Yeah. Aware need not be conscious, understand? Aware means just the awareness nature, aware. So the second support is maintain awareness. The third support is maintain awareness for as long as you can, if possible, over the entire duration when you are awake. Or technically later on, it's 24 hours, where you can also be aware while you go to sleep, if you can have that type of understanding and skill, stability of awareness to do that. Then the last support is trust. Trust is the last, but you normally don't need to do that. The last support is only needed if you have progressed very well along the path of meditation, awareness-based meditation. Then you are moving into the higher practice, the Bodhisattva way. And then you do the trust. I will explain that trust later on when there is condition. Otherwise, for the time being, just the first three support is good enough. So I repeat, relax body and mind completely at ease, then maintain awareness. So when you maintain awareness means you don't try to know, you don't try to do anything, you don't try to note anything, just aware, finish, aware, finish. So whatever that arise, aware, finish. If thought arise, aware, finish. Whatever senses that come into contact with the sense basis and the sense data, aware, finish. Like hearing, aware, finish. Tactile, aware, finish. If you can just continue to maintain awareness, don't try to know, don't do anything, then the mundane mind or the thinking mind, the sankhara activity, they will slow down, slow down. Then they become very quiet and very still. If you are able to do that, then you will realize the true mind, your silent mind, and that is your meditative mind. So the purpose of meditation is to realize that first. Then the third support is to stabilize the awareness nature, because without the awareness, you cannot meditate, because this is the awareness-based meditation. It's only the awareness which is beyond thought, beyond mind, that can awaken, that can observe without distortion, without interference from the thought process, from the memory, the conditioning, the views, the opinion. It is only this mind, the silent mind, the true mind, that can see things as they are, can insight into phenomena, can awaken and develop the understanding. So this type of meditation is very different. Most other people, because they don't understand this, they try to meditate with the thought, with the thinking mind. That's why I call that thought-based meditation, where the basis of meditation is to use the thought, come up with method and technique to know and do. So as long as you are actively doing, the thought becomes active. When the thought becomes active, you think a lot, you become heedless. How can you be mindful? How can you be aware? So this is very obvious. But people cannot see. And the reason why they have to do this is because the mental hindrances are so strong, the five mental hindrances, sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness of mind, and doubt. These are mental states that hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace and inner calmness. That's why without the spiritual faculty, opposite five, the mental hindrances keep on arising. And when they are there, it hinders your mind from entering the meditative state. That's why they cannot meditate. They realize a lot of thought arise, a lot of thinking, a lot of reaction of mind, like and dislike, sensual desire, and it will. The duality keep on arising. And at times, they feel sleepy, soft and torpor. Then the mind, for no reason, very restless, think a lot. Then a lot of unfinished business, born of your attachment, craving, clinging, your daily life was not in order. You live a life of disorder. That's why you have all your problems carried over through memory and attachment. That's why you cannot meditate. Then you have doubt. You are not sure how to start and which is correct. So all this prevents you from developing the meditation. So what they do is, they know they think a lot. The mind becomes heedless. So they want to control thought. So they come out with method, technique, and object of meditation to anchor the mind so that it does not wander off, so that they can focus, concentrate. But when you do that, it becomes a conditioned state. It's not a free mind. You cannot develop awareness with that. You go and know, you go and fix, you go and control. That's why it won't work. Whereas the Buddha taught anapanasati. Anapanasati is different. Anapanasati is mindfulness of the in and out breath. If you understand that, then you can use that as an initial skill for me to train your mind to develop sati through developing mindfulness of the in and out breath. Breathing in, aware, breathing out, aware. No focusing, no concentration, no doing, nothing. Just maintain awareness. The moment you are aware or mindful, there is no thought. Your mindfulness is the awareness moving with the breath as one specific phenomenal awareness, silent. That's how you meditate. So when you are able to develop the anapanasati until the mind becomes very quiet, very still, until the breathing becomes very subtle, and then that time, don't do anything. Stay with that silent mind. That is your true mind. It will come back to the same thing, but instead of going through all this, why not to understanding, you straight away silent, relax, maintain awareness. Then let the true mind arise. The other good object of meditation or skillful mind is the mind sweeping method, where you learn to decondition your heedless thinking by maintaining awareness. Starting with the forehead, you just feel your forehead. Any tension, any tightness, any stress within, you just feel it, then relax. Feel, relax. Then you sweep it down to your facial muscle, your eye muscle, do the same. Feel, relax. So every time you feel, relax, you don't think. That's how the heedless thinking with the mental hindrance, they become required. You do it over one or two times, the mind settle down and become required. But you need something for the mind to do, otherwise it becomes heedless again. That's why that mind sweeping method is just an initial skillful means to decondition your heedless thinking so that you can develop some form of mindfulness or awareness to be peaceful, to be calm. Then the momentum of thinking cannot come on. Otherwise, when the mental hindrance is so strong, your sankhara activity and thinking becomes so habitual. It's like non-stop churning, heedless churning and thinking, reaction of mind, thought is respond to memory, all this keep on arising. So when that thing happens, you cannot meditate. So mind sweeping method is a very good, skillful means to decondition your heedless thinking. Then the mind settles down. And then after that, you stabilize the mindfulness to anapanasati. Or you can combine with metta, loving kindness. Develop inner peace, followed by inner well-being. The inner well-being will make you calm, composed, peaceful. Then after that, you develop anapanasati to stabilize that sati or awareness. If you do that, you will end up similar. So this is a very comprehensive introduction. Hopefully, it can develop understanding. Since it's recorded, don't worry. You can listen to it later. So now I will let you meditate on your own. I will start the alarm 30 minutes from now. And immediately after that 30 minutes is up, my handphone will ring. Then after that, I will ring the bell 3 times. Upon hearing the bell, slowly, mindfully, come out of the meditation. Then try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have for as long as you can. For this other mind state that you need to develop the daily mindfulness. And the daily mindfulness leading to heedfulness, the stability of it, is the real meditation. Because according to the Buddha, Dhammapada verse 21, heedfulness is the path to the deathless, whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedless are as if dead. You cannot be heedful in the midst of life. You are as if dead. To be heedful, you have to be ever mindful, constantly meditative. As per Dhammapada verse 23. So to be ever mindful, you must train your mind to be mindful first. Then stabilize it to be ever mindful. Then use it to cultivate the way for power, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha, so that you can be constantly meditative, leading to heedfulness. That's how meditation is to be understood and developed. Okay, you can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation. Always remember, maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. Then stabilize that mind state. Then develop a very good religious routine, a daily religious routine, to maintain the cultivation of daily mindfulness throughout the day in whatever you do. Whether you're working or living life as usual, or resting at home or doing your household work and other things, maintain awareness. Just aware all action, all movement in the present moment. Just stabilize the daily mindfulness. When the daily mindfulness stabilizes, you will understand meditation. The real meditation only begins when you have stabilized your daily mindfulness, supported by the stable spiritual faculties. Without that, very difficult to realize the truth, to insight into phenomena, to awaken. Without mindfulness developed until very stable, leading to heedfulness, you don't stand a chance. You can never really penetrate the deeper aspect of Dhamma. Your mind is not sensitive enough. Your mind is not stable enough to develop the awakening, the understanding, the observation, to see things as they are. Then you have to develop the first, second, the turning wisdom, the three types of wisdom that correspond to the three types. Oh, sorry, the three types of turning of the Four Noble Truths that correspond to the three types of wisdom. First turning through hearing of the sutta, or nowadays it includes reading, listening. If you can awaken, then you will develop some form of wisdom which the Buddha called Suttamaya Panya. Panya is wisdom. Sutta is the discourse of the Buddha. So wisdom born of hearing the discourse of the Buddha is the first turning wisdom. Then after you have listened, you can reflect on it, contemplate on it. Then inquire to stabilize that understanding. So when you can stabilize that understanding, then you can slowly assimilate it into your nature. Yeah. So as you contemplate and reflect and inquire, you will develop more stable understanding, deeper understanding. Well, this is how you stabilize the understanding. And after that, you can assimilate them into your nature to develop what they call initial wisdom. The Buddha called it Yoniso Manasikara. Wisdom at the moment of sense experience. Manasikara is the moment of sense experience. That attention. Yoniso is wise. Wise attention at the moment of sense experience. Without that, you cannot understand life. You cannot cope with life. You need this initial wisdom, Yoniso Manasikara. And this is the one that come out spontaneously to prompt you and let you understand so that you will not develop the habitual tendency to stir your mind, to react to sense experience, to create the sensual desire and ill will, leading to the mental hindrance. Then when you do it so often, it becomes habitual tendency. That's how the anusaya, latent tendency, develop. Then when it becomes so habitual, it becomes asava, very latent, very, very spontaneous. It will just react. So that's how defilement develops into very strong anusaya and asava, based on the teachings from the adapter verses of the sutra. So we are at page 63. Turn to page 63. Then there is a stanza from the sutra. The Dhamma can be summarized as follows. There is the Dhamma of sentient beings. There is the Dhamma of Buddhas. And there is Dhamma of physical matter, living beings, and the mind. So this title is very beautiful. So the heading is Dhamma. So before we start, I have to explain this word. What is Dhamma? The meaning is very deep and not easy to comprehend. It's very profound. Literally, it is translated as the teachings of the Buddha. That's why we have the triple gem, the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. So Dhamma is the teachings of the Buddha. And what does the Buddha teach? He basically teaches us the truth. The truth about life, about existence, about the conditioned world. All of truth within nature. That's why Dhamma is truth. And the essence of the Buddha's teaching can be summarized into the Four Noble Truths. And these Four Noble Truths, they are called Noble Truths and not ordinary or special truth or ultimate truth or universal truth. It's because this Dhamma, the Four Noble Truths, they are very unique. They are truth that can awaken you and make you noble ones. That's why it's called Noble Truth. Arya Satya, Noble Truth. Satya is truth. Arya are noble ones. And during the time of the Buddha, the noble ones are enlightened disciples of the Buddha. In the sense that they are very noble in all aspects of life. They are very noble in the understanding of life. They have right view, right understanding of all the nature's law that governs life and existence. That's why the Noble Eightfold Path starts with the path factor of right view. Then they are very noble in the way they conduct themselves. The way they arise, their thought process is always right thought or harmonious thought. Then leading to right speech, right action, and the right way to live their life, right livelihood, right living. So all these are the special noble qualities of enlightened beings. That's why they are very noble in the way they communicate with others, in the way they act, in the way they speak, and in the way they arise their thought process, and in the way they live their life, in the way they interact with people, man and nature, humanity. So all these are the unique quality of an enlightened being. So for you to be an enlightened being, you must have all these noble qualities. That apart from that, they also have this noble forerunning effort that constantly allow them to purify their mind. That's why the forerunning effort are fundamental teachings of the Buddha. The initial cultivation you need to do this. The first right effort is to abandon all of the wrong thought, wrong speech, and wrong action that have arisen. Once you see or aware that they have arisen, then you have to abandon them. So what constitutes wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action? Whatever thought process that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, they are wrong thought, evil thoughts. That's why the three evil roots are the root of all evil. In Pali, the Buddha called it greed, lobha. Then the second one is anger, hatred, or aversion. He called it dosa. Then the third one is delusion, self-delusion, sakkaya ditti. He called it moha. So greed, hatred, and delusion, the meaning is very deep. You have to reflect on it, contemplate deep into it to understand what constitutes evil. The three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion are major evils. That's why he called the three evil roots. Root of all evil, make you evil. If your mind state has them, it will bring about karmic negativity, karmic downfall. You will break your precept. So this is the beauty of the teaching. So that first right effort is to abandon whatever wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action that arises. You have to be mindful, to be sensitive, to see the evil roots. And to see, you have to understand what they are. So you have to understand what constitutes evil, the three evil roots, and go deep into it. Take for example, greed, lobha. What constitutes greed? Is it just greediness? No. The Buddha said, even it includes all of your craving, your desire, your grasping, your clinging, and whatever you hold on to. So not only greediness, all of your selfish thoughts, selfish intent, they constitute the evil roots of greed, lobha. So selfishness, greediness, covetousness, desire, lust, craving, grasping, clinging, they are all part of the evil roots of greed. So when you start to expand on them, then later on you realize your subtle desire or craving or your subtle likes and dislikes, the way your mind reacts to sense experience, the duality that you arise, the pleasant and unpleasant feeling, the like and dislike, they can be very subtle. And these are evil roots, roots of all evil, greed and hatred. So hatred is the opposite of greed. Hatred is all of your anger, your envy, your jealousy, your dislike, your negativity of emotion and mind state. So that particular evil roots of hatred is also very wide. Even your slight envy and jealousy, your unhappiness when you see people doing well, promoted, then later on even the negativity of mind state of reaction to sense experience, then having remorse and all those things, these are all negativity of mind state. Sadness, emotional negativity. Then the last one, the evil roots of self-delusion. When you have self-delusion, means you don't understand the truth. You believe you are real, you exist. There is a permanent unchanging entity within where you can call, this is me, this is I, so that all this can be mine. Then you grasp that thing, you cling on to him. Then when there is delusion, you don't have wisdom, you have wrong view. You will create your own doubt, your own fear, your own worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation. All this are wrong thought. Thought that condition your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow, your lamentation, your selfishness, your greed, your envy, your jealousy. All these are wrong thought. So you need to understand what constitutes wrong thought so that you can free your mind. And a good way to understand it is whenever you are unhappy and not peaceful, the evil roots are there. You have arisen the wrong thought. You have become heedless. So that is the best check. And when you check, then you realize your lack of peace is because of your wrong view, your reaction to mind states, your greed, your hatred, your envy, your jealousy, your clinging, your views, your opinion, and your conditioning, including your fear, your phobia, your authoritative, what they call negative tendency. Some are very violent. They have violent character. Violent born of hatred, anger. Violent because they want to show authority. And they can be very mean. So all these are wrong thought, evil roots. When you understand, you can be sensitive. And when you develop the mindfulness, you can see them very clearly. Because mindfulness is the only instrument for you to see all this. Whereas the normal thought-based meditation, the cultivator, they get themselves entangled deeper because they don't understand what is going on. They will keep on telling people, hey, I can see my thought now. I can see my anger. I can see my selfishness, my emotional negativity, my fear. Actually, what is happening is they are using their thought to recollect the past thought. When we are developing the meditation as per the Buddha's teaching, it's all about mindfulness. When there is anger, be mindful. Means the awareness and the anger as one, not separate. Not the thought after realizing that you have become angry, then you recall, then you say, I still have anger. That is really delusion. You think anger is you because you never meditate correctly. You never develop mindfulness to be aware. When you are mindful and aware, at the moment your mind stir and react and arise the anger, then if you can be aware and be with it, find out for yourself, investigate what happened. Then you will come to realize the moment you are aware, it cannot move. It will dissipate and cease. Then you realize anger is dependent originating, condition arising. If I aware the third way, as taught by the Buddha, I stay with it, be with it, it ceases. Means anger was not intrinsic in my true mind. Before there was anger, there was no anger. So how did anger arise? Anger is dependent originating, born of wrong view, lack of understanding. That's why you cannot see things as they are. You cannot accept the reality of the moment. You get angry. you want things your way, which is not nature's way, which is not the reality. The reality is, like the Buddha said, when the condition has already arisen, condition like that, things be like that, it cannot be otherwise. This is the reality. This is what is. You have to come to terms with the reality. You have to be at peace with all situation, all condition. Then only you can have wisdom to attend to things. Otherwise, you will continue to react and stir your mind. Then you fail to understand. When you say, I can see my anger, means you don't understand. It's not see, it's the thought that recollect you have anger before that. Then you deludedly grasp through sakayadity, self-delusion, I still have anger. You think you are a cultivator, meditator, very experienced, should be enlightened by now, but you still have anger, you're very disappointed. But that is a delusion. The delusion is anger was never you. It come and it go. It's dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomenon. If anger is you, when anger ceases to be, did you die? You didn't die. But you cannot deny the fact that when things are not right, when you react, you get angry. Isn't it? But that anger was never you. That was an emotion born of sankhara activity, dependent originating. Meditation is to see this, to realize this, and awaken to it. So if it can cease, means it's not you. It's dependent originating. That's why the Buddha says, sankhara anicchang. You grasp and cling, give meaning, sankhara dukkang, lead to suffering. And because it's impermanent, dependent originating, that's why it's anatta, non-self, empty, not a permanent unchanging. That's how you insight into phenomena. That's how you awaken. So you need mindfulness, stability of mindfulness, sensitivity of mind. You need to understand the essential Dhamma, understand what constitutes evil. Then only you can abandon them. Understand them, be mindful, see them, abandon them. And there are five ways to abandon them. You want to know, go to the Heart Sutra books, then look over it again. I have taught them many times. And just now what I share with you is the third way, aware, which is the meditative way. The fastest way to realize that anger, emotion are dependent originating. They are not intrinsic. They were never you. They come and they go. Like feeling, they arise and they pass away. Like thought, arise and pass away. They come and they go. Dependent originating, condition arising, cause of phenomena. That's why empty, impermanent. When you cling and grasp one thing's your way, which is not nature's way, you suffer. The universal characteristics are very clear everywhere. Why can't you see? For those who see, they always see. That's why without stability of mindfulness, you are like blind. You are like heedless. No way you can see. Then the second right effort is even more beautiful. After you have this ability to understand all this and ability to abandon the wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action, and wrong way of living life, then you can straighten your view and develop the initial wisdom to attend to all these things. Then the next time when you encounter similar sense experience, before the anger arise, before the envy, jealousy arise, you can straight away arise the right effort to prevent it from arising. Why? Because you already have seen them, how they actually delude you, condition you into negativity, trap you, entangle you, create affliction in you, suffering in you, cause your mind to stir and react. Especially those who have gone through a lot of suffering, misery, depressed people. I have many Kalyamita before they recovered. They have depression. Then they share with me their experience. They said, Brother, after you have taught us this, it is so beautiful. Now they know why they become so miserable, so entangled. We are almost 90% of their thought process, their action and speech, and the way they live their life is all with the evil roots. They were so heedless. They keep on arising wrong thought that condition their suffering and misery. Means they don't have the understanding of this teaching, the Dhamma. Then when they have this understanding, they can relate to what happened to them in the early part of their life when they were in depression, where they saw all this wrong thought, all this evil root, and how they get entangled. So there were many Kayamita who told me, one of them is Alicia. He straight away saw when that sense experience developed the habitual tendency to like want to react and comment the habitual way, the old way. He straight away knew. He said, you again, enough. For 16 years you have tormented me, now no more. The moment he see, he understand that thing cease. It cannot have any more power over her. That's why she can now smile, look at the defilement, and it will subside. Then later on, he developed the third effort, third right effort and the fourth right effort to actually reverse the heedless living into heedful living. So the third right effort is very important. The third right effort to arise the right thought, right speech, and right action that are still not in them. And this one is very important. This one you have to cultivate. Then you need to develop the understanding what constitutes right thought. What are right thought? The book only teaches the four Brahma Vihara as right thought. No, there are a lot more right thought. It's not just metta, karuna, mudita, and upekkha. These are what is commonly taught in the text. The real right thought are thought that are virtuous thought, free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Of course, thought of loving kindness is free of the evil root. Thought of compassion, rejoicing, having an equanimous mind. They have this quality of right thought. But there are also other types of right thought, like sincerity, contentment, respect, gratitude, gentleness, pleasantness, kindness, understanding, wisdom leading to harmony, peace. All these are right thought. The most important one is to have gratitude. Then be contented with things. Then appreciate life. Be appreciative of life. Appreciate what you have, your good karma, your good condition. Appreciate what your parents has given you. They have given birth to you, give you life, care for you, provide for you, support you, sacrifice for you. They did so much thing for you. So appreciate. Have gratitude. Then when you are married, appreciate what your spouse contribute towards the harmony and peacefulness of the family. Each do your duty and contribute. So when you appreciate what your partner or spouse has done for you and sacrifice for the family, you have Dhamma. You do your duty. Right duty is right Dhamma. Dhamma, my teacher always tell me. When you do your duty in accordance with the nature's law, law of karma, then you reap what you sow. Whatever goodness, right duty that you perform, like you care for your children, your family, provide for your family, your spouse, sacrifice for them, do a lot of wholesome things, no negativity. So what is karma? You reap what you sow. Do good begets good. Do evil begets evil. You plant the seed of wholesomeness. You reap the fruit of wholesomeness. You plant the seed of evil. You reap the fruit of evil. So all this is very clear. If you mistreat them, if you cause misery and suffering to them, if you become irresponsible in future, you will be born into a family with parents who will neglect you, oppress you and do all those things to you. But if you care for them, provide for them, be sincere towards them, and develop the Dhamma understanding to give them the good life, the freedom to live, to act, and to see their potential, then guide them through life. If you do all this, you reap what you sow. In future, you will have good parents who will care for you, provide for you, do a lot of good things for you. This is what Dhamma is all about. This is what four-right effort is all about. That's why you have to really go into it. The right effort to cultivate all the right thought, virtuous thought, kind thought that are still not in you. Then the same go towards right speech. What constitutes right speech? First, you must know what are the four types of wrong speech. The first one is very easy. Huh? What is the first one? Harsh speech. Speak harshly. That is not the way to communicate, not the way to speak or interact. Harsh speech, you must avoid. Then, second one is telling lie. Then the third one is backbiting. Saying negative thing about people behind their back. These are also wrong speech. Then the last one is frivolous speech. Sweet nothing. You become heedless. Out of fun joke, you just say what you like. But sometimes it can hurt people. It can cause disharmony without you knowing. It can lead to negativity or karma. So slandering is the same. When you slander somebody, it's like speech, wrong speech. So in order to reverse all this, you need to develop a way of speech or communication. You have to develop good virtue, good character. You have to be wise. So you have to learn to speak in a very gentle, pleasant manner that leads to harmony, that leads to wholesomeness, goodness, that can help people feel joy, feel safe when they are with you. Speech that shows sincerity, honesty, kindness, goodness. So all this, you have to train yourself. Then especially when you are in a service industry, what you say is very important. Because sometimes you may be taking emergency call. You have to be sensitive, friendly. Hello, may I help you? They feel better. Don't worry, calm down. No need to panic. Tell me slowly, then I can help you. I can write it down and we will send help to you immediately. Then sometimes you can also play your part when you visit government department or service industry department. When you speak to people nicely and address people nicely, can you help me? I am new here. I hope you can guide me on this. Then people will talk to you in a very nice way. Then remember to say thank you. Thank you so much for helping. Then have goodness, have kindness. Smile, that is the best way to break the ice. Thank you for helping. Thank you for attending to me. This will go a long way. It makes people's day better. A lot of these things you may not realize until you are in their shoe, where they have to confront a lot of funny people, unreasonable people. Sometimes they get scolded for nothing. And they got blamed and they are under pressure from their bosses and other things sometimes because of work pressure, stress. So these are the skillful ways to cultivate, to develop understanding, to develop right thought, right speech and right action. And act act with wholesomeness, act with sincerity, kindness, honesty. These are all right actions. Yeah. Do not kill, do not harm, save life, be compassionate, be kind, have gratitude, have contentment, no more envy, no more jealousy. That's why keep your precept. Keep your precept means what? You protect yourself and you protect others. It's like wearing masks. You protect yourself, you protect others. So keeping precept is very meritorious in that sense. Otherwise, you harm yourself karmically. And when you break precept, you harm others too. You kill others. You cause emotional negativity. And all this has its karmic implication. You will become the victim later on. You will hit back. So these four right efforts are very powerful. The last right effort, of course, is to refine upon all this right thought, right speech, right action, and right way to live your life, right livelihood, and right living, so that you can actually refine upon it and perfect them all, so that they can become virtuous thought, virtue. So the 10 perfection, the bodhisattva that walked the way, the path to cultivate, need all this fourth right effort to refine upon and perfect them all until they become a part of your nature, a part of you. So when you have the embodiment of this Noble Eightfold Path factor, then you are noble ones. Noble ones that have all these noble qualities. Then after that, they have right mindfulness, right samadhi, leading to wisdom. That's how they are called enlightened beings. So when it comes to Dhamma, I hope by now you understand the definition. These are the teachings that the Buddha has taught us. And these teachings are all about truth, nature's truth. The essence of his teaching is the Four Noble Truths. The first noble truth of dukkha or suffering is to explain to us the reality of life and existence, the eight conditions that can afflict living beings. When you live your life long enough, it's a universal problem. You will come to experience this eight condition. The Buddha called it the reality of life and existence. He said birth, old age, sickness and death. These are the four first reality. Then when you are with people whom you don't like, when you cannot get what you want, when there is separation from your loved one, your prized possession, you cling on to and hold on to dearly, suffering can arise if you don't have the wisdom, bodhidharma understanding. Then in short, the final summary, it is your self-delusion that conditions you to grasp onto the five aggregate of my mind. The five grasping aggregate that he called dukkha. Or is sickness and death and birth is easy to understand. When you confront them without understanding, it can be very traumatic. A lot of people suffer, become miserable. Then separation also same. Separation through divorce, through death, through nature's disaster, through calamity and all those things. These are various happenings. Then when you cannot get what you want, is when you meet up with difficult people, bullies, then sometimes you in the career environment, you can also have problem when you have bosses that you don't like, difficult to work with. Those who conduct themselves in a very funny way, and they call it management by fear and harassment. They put fear in you, harass you because you're scared you lose your job. So that fear, that stress is tremendous. So all these are related to life. These are life reality. Yeah. So when you confront all this, when your expectation in life are not met, expect to be promoted, not promoted, expect your parent to understand you, your spouse to remember your birthday, your anniversary, but sometimes they forgot. So what? How are you going to attend to all this? some people develop very sensitive emotion and they react terribly. Sometimes they just walk out of the relationship and they get very angry. We have to have the Dhamma to understand all these are evil. Getting angry is not the way. Whatever happened, don't get angry. Don't react. Don't project your thought and develop the fear. Be at peace to accept the reality first. Then with a clear mind, inquire what happened. Then reflect, contemplate. How can I resolve this amicably? If you follow Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. But that is the meditation. So that's how the Buddha taught us. That's how it becomes beautiful. And after that, he moved on and say, suffering need not be. There is a cause behind all suffering, the Buddha say. In the second Noble Truth, he say, it is craving born of sakayadity that conditions suffering. Then the third Noble Truth, he said, suffering need not be, enlightenment in the here and the now, Nibbana can be realized. So you don't have to go through all this suffering when you understand his teaching, his Dhamma. It's so beautiful. And he doesn't end there. He said, there is a fourth Noble Truth that teach you the path or the way to go out of this suffering. He said, if you were to cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering, which is the enlightenment in the here and the now, which is what all Buddhists are cultivating and look forward to realize. So all this summarizes his teaching, which we call the Dhamma. So I just managed to define this word Dhamma. Eh? Now we can go back to the sharing. Hopefully I can finish a little bit more. Eh? So I read to you again, now you understand. The Dhamma can be summarized as follows. Because everything in life is Dhamma. Now you understand? Because life refers to the conditional. And there is nature. And there are laws that govern nature. Then there is a duty that we have to do towards the law of nature. If you do that, you will reap the fruit. That's how the four aspects of Dhamma come. And one of the monks in Thailand taught this four aspects of Dhamma, which is really beautiful. He is from Swemok. I forgot his name right now. What is the name of that monk right now? Achan Buddha Dasa. Achan Buddha Dasa. He is a very good monk. So Dhamma means all of life, all of truth within nature. So there is the Dhamma of sentient beings, not only living beings. Not only human beings. It includes all sentient beings, living beings. And there is also the Dhamma of the Buddha line. And there is also the Dhamma of all physical things, living beings and mind. It's the phenomenal world of consciousness and form. So all this are Dhamma. So when we understand Dhamma, we understand truth, we understand the secret of life, we know how to live life, then we can liberate our mind, set ourselves free so that we don't have to suffer. Then we can have the noble life, the good life, to realize the third phase of Dhamma, Pativeda. The life of enlightened being. You can live it. So there are three phases of Dhamma according to the Buddha. He said phase one is pariyatti, the learning of the teaching. You learn about this teaching. Then after you have learned, you put it into practice. He called it patipatti, phase two Dhamma. Then when you cultivate it very well and awaken, then you get to reap the fruit of your hard work, the third phase of Dhamma, Pativeda. You get to reap the fruit of your hard work, means live the life of enlightened being. And this is your reward. And it's so beautiful. You can do that. My nature, sadhu you, and rejoice with you. Okay, it's almost 10 o'clock already. I haven't even moved on to the main page. I only finished the title. I think it's okay. Maybe I read a bit more, then 10 o'clock we can stop. I supposed to give you a toilet break, but I forgot. So I will give you the toilet break after this. Every day and every moment, we encounter the Dhamma. Very true. We are life itself is the Dhamma. Whether it is the law and principle governing our daily life, or those governing nature. See? Nature has its own set of law, nature's law. That's why these are called Dhamma. Truth. The working of all things and all matter in the world are contained in the Dhamma. That's why Dhamma is true. And what is true? Truth are the reality that explain the way things are. Not your truth, not my truth, or anybody else's truth. Well, these are our personal views and opinion of truth. But the nature's law has only one set of truth. Truth is. Well, that is the truth, reality. That's why Dhamma is. The essential Dhamma is. That's why the Dhammapada verse, 483 verses of the Buddha, they are evergreen, never become obsolete. Or go wrong after time. Oh, it's not easy to come out with that type of understanding. So this is beautiful, right? Whether we look at the principles. Oh, sorry. The Dhamma applies to all sentient beings. Fundamentally, the Dhamma is the principle. The Buddha Dhamma is the principle of the Buddha's way. Whether we look at the principles of the Buddha or the principle of sentient beings, all principles can be said to apply to all material things, living beings, and mind. Very true. Okay, we stop there. We stop there. So we can continue our second session. Second session is meditation reporting, followed by whatever question you have. Yeah, it's
good awesome. Evening, brother.
Yeah, good evening. Yes.
Yeah, two of my friends, Annie and Susie.
Yeah, yeah, Annie, yeah, I saw her, yeah. Susie, yeah, I saw Susie was the first to log in today. But today sharing is very good for newcomer, for people who are new to our website. So I explain our session very clearly and meditation and the Dhamma, everything very complete. So today's recording, we should use it for sharing. We should send it out. To more people so that they can understand. And whoever who are new, who wants to come and join us or understand what we do and what we share, listen to this particular video sharing. Today is 10th of December, remember, 2020, before we go to 2021. Okay, Joyce, now you can continue.
Oh, I'm supposed to nominate, is it?
Yeah, you're supposed to nominate or say something first. If
okay.
You have anything you can say, then you nominate somebody.
No, I hope both of my friends find your Zoom beneficial and helpful in some way for their practice.
Oh, so do.
Yeah.
Yes, very good.
Very good, Yeah. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, Brother Teo and everybody, but brothers and sisters. I'm Team, or my Chinese name is Pui Hua.
Oh, yeah, Pui Hua, yes.
I've heard so much of you, Brother Teo, from the other devotees that I met.
Oh,
so today I ask Joyce.
Oh, sadhu.
And through maybe good affinity, good karma, I can and join. Yeah.
Definitely.
So, I find your explanation very good, brother.
You should listen to it again. That you will go in. And it's very, very beautiful, profound and beautiful. And it can last you very long until you very advanced in your cultivation. You listen again. You will still find truth inside there that you have not understood. Very good, Sadhu. I rejoice. My nature rejoices. You want to introduce yourself? You are from where? And how long have you been learning the Dhamma?
I'm from KL here.
Yes.
I've been following or learning the Dharma since 30 years ago.
Wow, that's very long, Sadhu.
University. But I didn't practice meditation.
Oh,
okay. So it's off on, off on.
Oh, okay. Which uni were you from?
I was from University Pertanian.
Oh, UPM.
That time we have the late Chief Reverend always come into the camp.
Yeah. Kesri Damananda. Yes.
Yes.
So what year did you graduate?
I graduated in
1989. Oh, 89. Oh, you are 10 years my junior.
Were you from there, Brother Tio?
No, I'm from MU, University of Malaya.
From
MU, yeah. Graduated in 1979. So 89 is 10 years later.
10 years later, yeah.
So you must be 50-something.
I'm 56 now.
Yeah, correct, yes.
So now it's more urgent for me to learn and practice.
Yeah, Sadhu, rejoice.
Okay, that's all.
Then we can go to Susie. Now we get Susie.
Hello, Brother Chio.
Yeah, Susie, nice meeting you.
Hi. I am actually Annie's cousin sister. Yep. I know about you through my cousin sister, and this is the first time I'm attending the Zoom meeting. Thank you so much. I'm new to Buddhism. Yeah, so this session is very good. Very good introduction for me.
We also have a website. You can get it from Joyce. Go to brothertheo.com. All our books, our video, audio file, all are there. Then we have the home page where our latest activity. Then we have this about us. You should read that one. How our Kayanamita grouping come about. It's very beautiful. And the noble values and the noble visions and all those things. Then the whole teaching is there, very beautiful. You should make use of it. The mind map also, my daughter did one. You should go and have a look. There is a lot of beautiful Dhamma material, repository of very comprehensive and very useful Dhamma teachings and sharing. And these are possible because of all the Kayamitas they have out and they created the condition for all this sharing to happen. So you will have more and more understanding as you develop interest in this teaching. I can guarantee you your life will change. You will have the good life. You will understand many things that you never understand before. Sadhu to you, Susie. You have good affinity, Sadhu. Do you all have any question so that I can answer them too?
For the time being, I have no questions.
Hey, Brother Chiu, they are volunteer helpers for Ajahn Chalo's retreat, and they have been to Anandagiri as well.
Sadhu.
Yeah, so they have sort of helped me out in quite a few ways. We are actually in touch with one another, even with MCO, CMCO, EMCO, whatever. So we just had lunch this afternoon, so that's how your name came about.
Sadhu.
I was telling them my so-called life story.
How you change. Yours is beautiful. Yours is also one of the very unique and special one. You should thank Mimi, Mimi Chang, for bringing you.
Definitely. Okay. So anyway, one of my friends, they're new, so they'll probably come in on Tuesday and Thursday class.
No problem. Yeah. It's an informal session. They can come in anytime they want.
So you want me to nominate someone? Maybe we should nominate one of them. One of the seniors,
Yeah.
Pamasuri.
Yeah, Pamasuri, yeah.
Haven't heard from her for a long time.
Yeah. Pamasri, you Where have she? Been nominated. She will come in. Yeah. She is there almost every second.
Hello, my dear friend.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
You, I haven't seen you a long time also because you have been missing.
Yeah. Missing in action. No, yeah.
Missing in action.
Okay, I'll let you do the sharing, yeah, Pamasuri.
What to share? Tama is everywhere.
Yeah, Tama is everywhere.
Yes, actually the just now Brother Theo explained about this Dharma in a very clear way, and it really hits me lah.
Yeah.
Tama is everywhere.
Yeah.
Like when even when you are using electricity and water.
Yeah.
We have to be very careful because it has been lingering with me that no, this is when we can afford to pay, it is not our right, but it's our priority.
Yeah.
And we have to use it in a very careful way because it comes from the nature.
Yeah.
We have the nature and. Yeah. Even this, each drop of water is also Dharma.
Yeah. Very true, yes. Yeah, these are resources of nature. That's why my teacher, Acharyan Trama, is very wise. He said, nature has great loving kindness. Nature just give and give. Nature never take. Why did he say so? He said, just develop sensitivity of mind. If we are mindful, if we are sensitive, we will come to understand the air we breathe come from where? Come from nature. The water that nourishes our health, that give us life, sustain our life, they come from where? They come from nature. The food we eat, the nature's resources that we need to build our infrastructure, our buildings, our airport, our aeroplane, automobile, and the whatever luxury of life that we need, they come from nature. That's why nature just give and give. And nature is so beautiful. If you look at nature, you can learn a lot because nature is our greatest teacher. Dhamma is nature. Dhammachat, Ajahn Buddhadasa said the same thing. So when we understand nature, we understand Dhamma. When we understand Dhamma, we understand life. We develop compassion. We develop loving kindness. We appreciate life. We value resources. We value life. If we destroy nature, nature will destroy us. Why? Because we are part of nature. If we pollute nature with more and more negative thought, unwholesome thought, then nature will suffer. Then the world will be afflicted. There will be war. There will be a lot of misunderstanding, conflict. And conflict can happen in so many ways. The pandemic already created a world of so much problems. Then if you look at the way the world developed conflict and war, it is really very easy through racial. That's why racist comment, racialism, then religion, belief system, then territorial division, they can lead to a lot of conflict, war, and misunderstanding. So we have not only trade war, we have religious war and so many types of war. So living being without the Dhamma, without a spiritual understanding, the world can have a lot of problems. Even the pandemic is a result of human consciousness. We are the way we have actually overuse our resources and the way we pollute environment. That's why this virus all they mutate and surface through all this condition that has developed to give rise to this so-called COVID-19. It has been quite a while since the Spanish flu that we don't have a pandemic. Normally we have a, they call it epidemic, epidemic, not a pandemic. Pandemic is very severe, global. So Dhamma, like you share, is very beautiful, where you can appreciate resources of nature, and you can see Dhamma in everything. That is the beginning of deepen cultivation, means you have the cultivation already. Otherwise, you cannot see all this. Otherwise, the human mind, the mundane mind, is always selfish. You know what is selfish? Huh? Think of yourself only. No time for others. My daughter want to share. Huh? Yeah.
Mami Tofo, Sister Padmasuri and fellow Kalyana Mitas. Actually, building on the example Sister Padmasuri shared, it's something I've also contemplated before. It's actually a very relevant example nowadays because we get water shortages, water stoppages very frequently in Malaysia during these recent few months. And in relation to right thought and wrong thought, it's actually very clear when with this example, right, what Sister Padmasuri said was, we pay for it, we expect to have water supply, and then we take it for granted. And nature is actually very precious. Water doesn't come from the water department. Water doesn't come from the people that bring it to us. Water is actually nature, and the whole system come together with so many people and things involved, the land, the environment, the factories around, the houses around, what people do with the water upstream, downstream, rainfall, landslide, mountains, rivers, when they're shifting off the earth, so many things that happen, and then we turn on the tap and we expect it to be there. So the wrong thoughts that arise in water stoppage, it will be like the greed, hatred, and self-delusion, the fear, and then the blame, the anger. Someone has been lazy, or someone hasn't been doing their job. Why does it take so long to resume water supply? These are all wrong thoughts. It doesn't help the predicament. It only exaggerates our suffering. But we indulge in all these thoughts every time it happens. If it's an automatic switch, we flip this switch every time it happens, we get upset first. And then all these things come in. People have not been doing their job. The government shouldn't have been so lazy. This shouldn't be this kind of management, or someone is being incompetent. This is the first thing we fly to in our minds. And these are all the negative tendencies, the wrong thought, the set that we have wired into our brains, that we hard circuit us to go this way when we think. And then I start to think like, then what is right thought? If these are all wrong thoughts, and I shouldn't be conditioning my mind to jump to this at first glance, at the minute I see water stop, or when I see warning, no more water tomorrow, then what is the right thought I should arise when I see this next time? Then it's like, oh, there are countries that don't have infrastructure. Yeah. There are countries that don't run on this. And it's actually unreasonable to think the world is full of selfless people running the government and water department. Everyone's are saints. Actually, yeah, everyone should be hardworking. If that's the kind of world I expect to be living in, then I'll be sorely disappointed my whole life. Then when I start to look at this, I start to straighten my view, and then I start to appreciate, hey, there's always something to have gratitude for in life. That's the right thought. When I don't have water, I mean, there are people worse off than me. If I think that way, my day doesn't become that bad. I don't exaggerate the situation and cause additional suffering in my mind. My mind doesn't have to be sick when my body is sick. Yeah. So I find that this is really, really how we can release ourselves from the self-caused suffering that we have every day. We subject ourselves to so much wrong thought. The minute we can smile, we can laugh at the situations we are in, then like shower halfway, no water, ha ha, like, wow, I should take a photo and post this. It's like fantastic, something to talk about with my friends. I mean, then the life, the same situation can become such a interesting sharing with friends and the people around me. Yeah, so it can be turned around. I hope this helps.
Sadhu, let us rejoice. Huh? Because when you appreciate life, when you look at life with Dhamma, from the Dhamma point of view, then you can appreciate things that you normal people take for granted, then your life change. That's why under the first noble truth reality, the seventh reality, when you cannot get what you want, when your expectation in life are not met, when things don't go your way, people become angry, unhappy, miserable. So this is the first noble truth reality. So the Buddha say, when you confront all this reality, we are as one. Humanity is a common problem. If you don't have the wisdom, you will react to it, get yourself entangled, afflicted, and become miserable over it. Why must we be this way? Like my daughter say, nature is such. Nature has its condition. Everything must fall into place or the condition. Then you have a water supply system in accordance to what the engineer has designed and planned. So being a civil engineer, I understand this very well because I worked in the waterworks department in the early years of my career. I designed water treatment plant. I designed water distribution system, pumping system, reservoir, and all those things. And I understand the whole process because I work in Selangor Waterworks. So all those pumping stations that they talk about, Sungai Langat, Sungai Selangor, these are during my time, planned and developed as the year passed by. So I also understand catchment. But like my daughter say, not everybody is selfless. There are many selfish people, including the public, the industrialists and all things. That's why a lot of pollutant has been dumped into the river. When we pollute our water resources, pollute our river, we are going to face a consequence. We are going to suffer. So water disruption is one of the consequences, and it's very minor. But you see the impact in it. When you are 3-4 days without water, what will happen? The one thing that most people find very difficult to tolerate is you got no water to flush your big discharge. you call it a big business. The small business you can tolerate, but after a while also not easy. So I told my wife, don't worry, we'll have a lot of rain. Then MPPJ give us this, the plastic rubbish dump, the orange color one, oh, very nice, oh, big enough. So I got two houses side by side. So I end up with three. They give us somehow, I got three. Then we fill them with water. So all this rainwater, I use it for flushing, watering the plant and maybe washing car or whatever. And then I have no water problem. Then two house, I got enough storage. So most of the time, our family is not affected, but I also treasure water, appreciate water. Whenever we have clean water, the resources of nature, like electricity, everything, we don't take for granted. We appreciate. This is all good karma. These are our good conditions. That's why when you are appreciative of life, life becomes meaningful, beautiful. Otherwise, every off and on problem, you complain, become miserable. And that makes the mind very sick, very ill, very afflicted. And that is heedless thinking, wrong thought. You continuously churn that type of heedless behavior, habitual tendency. So this is Dhamma in daily life. When you have Dhamma, you become different. Your mind state becomes different. You can have joy in almost any situation. And my daughter say, bathe halfway, the water supply cut off. You can still laugh. Sometimes the pump breaks down. sometimes no more direct supply. So what to do? Like the Buddha said, this is the reality. Accept it and do what you have to do. No amount of complaint can help you. No amount of anger, hatred, fear, and misery can help you solve your problem. So always remember, when you face a situation or a problem or First Noble Truth reality, never react, never get angry, never become emotional and unhappy. Otherwise, you become worse. Because this negative tendency will set in motion the negative karma, the negative friction of those negative karma that you have cultivated in the past. They will surface. That's why whenever things go wrong, you get angry, the evil root, it conditions more negativity and you become worse. That's why don't get angry. Don't get emotional. Don't develop the fear. These are all wrong mind state. These are all mental hindrance. They are not spiritual faculty. Develop the faith, sadha, virya, and the wisdom, the right view, to accept the reality within the moment. Then act. Act with wisdom. Don't act according to memory. Memory is full of rubbish inside there. So all this, you can go through the teaching and you will understand that life can become beautiful. So Pamasri, coming back to you. So thank you for sharing about resources of nature. And now you can continue. We still have a few more minutes.
I think that's all, Vajra.
You haven't gone into it. You can continue. Share something. Make use of the 3-4 minutes. Whatever you want to share, Dhamma in daily life, or what you encounter, or today sharing, whether you find it interesting or not. And
today's sharing is like a revision to us.
Yes.
It's a really a good revision. Very.
And there's a lot of joy.
Maybe I'll share one verse given by this Guang Qing Lao He Sang.
Very good, sadhu.
He talked about this. He said about Chen Xing Yi Qi, Bai Zhang Men Kai.
Yeah.
Think whenever we have negativity, by the Zhang Ai is
coming obstruction.
Yes, coming obstruction.
The door.
Hundreds of coming obstruction.
That
will
door
arise.
Open.
Yes, the door open. Yes.
Yeah, for them to manifest. So that's how they arise. Yeah, very true. When you arise the negativity of thought, then it create condition for a lot of negative karmic friction to surface. Very true. When you have the Dhamma, you can understand all this beautiful truth or saying. Very good, Sadhu. Anything else?
I think that's all I can.
That's all. Okay, thank you for all the good sharing.
Thank you, Rathya. Thank you.
So let us rejoice. Sadhu. Then we will, as usual, do the sharing of merits, transform merits. Then you make your aspiration. And after that, we will end the video session. Then we can have our fellowship. Fellowship is feedback from Kayamita, whoever who has any feedback or sharing, you can propose to us on how to improve this session of sharing the Dhamma, the Zoom session or whatever problem, maybe technical problem or whatever problem you encounter, like the video too soft or there is distortion or there is whatever, you can actually bring them up and we can try our very best to improve on it. Then, because it's a fellowship, no video recording, so don't worry, you just share what you like. For people who are more shy, you can use the fellowship window to actually speak up. It can help you in your personal development so that you have more confidence in public speaking, so that you can carry yourself, share your whatever understanding, and bring forth the message to the masses or the public. Okay.
Maya, can you unmute? Ah, Maya is coming in already. Yeah.
Hi, Radio.
Yeah.
Radio.
Yes.
Don't show my face.
Yeah, no need. I know now you're making up. Yeah, you're making up. Huh? So Joyce, no need to see. Yeah.
My hair is bad. It doesn't look good.
Oh, don't worry. Don't worry. That is just the external manifestation. External appearances. So the true Manyuan is the beautiful heart. The beautiful heart that has the Dhamma. That one more important. So beauty lies within, not externally. Yeah, yes.
And all Kalimitas.
Yeah.
I just want to say that the Noble Eightfold Path is actually very, very important.
Yeah, sadhu.
Before this, I know that is the core teachings of the Buddha, but
yeah.
I never really pay attention to it. I don't know why that, you know. Pay attention more to other things like
correct.
Sitting down, meditating,
yeah.
Listening to other people's fantastic.
Correct.
I don't know why.
Now you develop the understanding already. Because last time people are gullible. They like to listen to what? Psychic, fantastic meditation. Wow, like very special. But the one that is applicable to life that can help you solve your problem and improve your life is Noble Eightfold Path.
Yes.
Ah, that is the real one. But people don't like Noble Eightfold Path. We are no psychic. Not exciting. Not exciting. They want excitement.
Very normal.
So they want excitement. You should bring them to see Joyce last time before she knows the Dhamma. That one very cheeky one. That type of life. Very cheeky one. Very exciting one. So that one Joyce can share. She got very good understanding. Yeah, continue, Wanyan. Yes, you are right.
If we all try that, right, you can really see the difference.
Big difference. It can help you in your office. It can help you in your life.
Yeah.
In your family relationship, with your neighbor, with all people that you have relationship with. That's why the Noble Eightfold Path is very wonderful. That is the teaching, the meditation that can lead you out of suffering, that can transform you into a virtuous being, a wise being, that can protect you from downfall, negativity or karma. Noble Eightfold Path is actually advice of the Buddha. You follow Noble Eightfold Path, you avoid all evil, do good, purify the mind to become enlightened. Very good. Manya, you got a very good point. Continue.
For example, that like I used to always want to be right as because I think I am right. Then I always become unhappy when I don't get people don't see my point, you know. I feel like
you become very unhappy,
very unhappy. Particularly, I just realized that those are not important.
That is your view, your habitual tendency, which you have not seen it. You are not able to straighten that view and root it out. Now you straighten already, you can root it out. It's not important. Understand or not?
Yeah. I still don't get what I want. That means
it's still the first noble truth reality, suffering.
Then there is peace. No more fighting. Then you focus on the goodness of the other person. You are able to see that actually the other person, whatever they do, they do according to their views, and they do according to what they think is best.
Yes.
They think that way, they do it that way because they think that is the best. May not be the best for me, but they think it's best for them.
Correct.
And also for other people.
Yes, they are the way they are.
Now
you understand. You have to accept them for what they are. We are their condition like that. They will do things like that. That is wisdom. Then you can be at peace.
Yeah.
Then you can laugh. Then you always think on their behalf. No more about you. That's why you become more sensitive. You can observe people. Because you understand. Otherwise your thought is always selfish. Ayo, how can he do that? How can she behave like that? Why is she so intolerant? So unforgiving? And so... like they don't follow your instruction, so reluctant to follow my instruction. So all these are from your own selfish thinking, self-delusion. So when you start to see all this and understand, you reverse the way you live life. You become heedful, you become mindful, you become sensitive, you don't react anymore. You can accept them for what they are. That's why it has transformed you. Very good, Mayan. Yeah, you continue, Mayan.
I share one incident which I was very glad that I didn't hit out at the other person. I have one colleague which I'm quite close to before the MCO, right? Like for as long as she was my colleague in the same department, we always go out for lunch together.
Oh.
So during the MCO, we all work from home, and I also don't see her often anymore. So she got transferred my section, to another section. Yeah, and she wasn't very happy about that. And then at one time, my boss had a meeting, they want to transfer another staff out from my section to go to her section. So who to send, I suggested one staff which is not, I know that she is not very good, but then I was thinking she may not be good in writing, but because she's very good in talking, and in English, so I thought she would be more suitable in. So I say, I throw out the name. So after I throw out that name, I spoke to her, after that, after that, she wasn't in the meeting. I spoke to her. Wow, she was so angry, Then she started accusing me. Why? Because before that, when we always have lunch, she told me that this stuff is not good. She don't like her. Because, she tell me why. Then she say, you know all that, and yet you recommended her. But then I told her, it's not because of that. I recommended her because I see that, she's not good in one aspect, but she's good in another aspect.
Yeah.
And I thought that session would make good use of that aspect. But she wasn't listening. She was just like so angry, and she keep on saying that I'm bad, I'm cruel, that shouldn't have confided in me. So I was also a bit not happy with her.
Luckily you didn't react.
I didn't.
Luckily.
I just keep quiet. I let her say whatever she want to say. I just let it be.
Good. That's how you can become different.
I know why already. The following day, suddenly tell me, yesterday
overreacted. She overreacted.
She said, I don't know the whole story.
Yeah.
Then she said, but you don't know the whole story. She told me, she said, because I don't see her in the office, she told me that over the past 2 weeks, she was very, very stressful.
Oh.
And why was she very stressful? Because there was another staff, her subordinate.
It
was trying to step her on her back, you know. So she said she was very unhappy and very stressed out already. So when I recommended that staff to her, the last straw.
She got so mad at me
and then keep on scolding me.
Correct. Now you understand why, the reason.
I understand why. So I think sometimes we just keep quiet and see how things
You have improved, because in the past you would have been miserable after what she has done or reacted to you. So now you have actually transformed and changed for the better. That's why you can see now you are more patient, willing to listen her out, because you can see that she is not listening to you. He doesn't want to reason in a very objective manner. She is like overwhelmed by the anger, the hatred, but like she explained to you later, it was because of her earlier problem, how she got herself very unhappy and stressed out because of the other colleague, the subordinate who want to backstab her. So you take all this very personally. In Korea, it's very common. There's a lot of office politics. So you will know how to apply the Dhamma to help you understand. That's why through mindfulness, you learn. You see how people get entangled, because you understand how that mundane mind, through delusion, without Dhamma, without Noble Eightfold Path, they will just react like normal heedless living beings. So this is very good, Maya. Sadhu to you. Sadhu, Anything else?
Thank you, Brother Tio.
Thank you for the good sharing.
I will be very miserable.
Otherwise you would have been very miserable.
One more thing, then she shared with me Then she shared with me what the other stuff did to her, you know. And I listened. Then I was thinking, and I tell her, what she did to you actually is nothing.
Small thing.
Any evidence to
correct.
She was afraid that the bank will kick her out of the career.
Yeah, that fear is fear of losing their job. So this is job insecurity. That's why the mind has fear, insecurity. So this is job insecurity. Good. Manyan, sadhu to you.
Thank you, Rajya.
Thank you.
The Dharma that I learned from you.
We all rejoice for you too, your good progress, sadhu. So let us end 10:48, just nice. Thank you so much, Manyan, for the good sharing, sadhu. Then also we should thank Joyce for nominating you, the right condition.